Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to this episode of Biscuit and Tea Mystic, featuring international psychic Kelly Jo Monahan. Kelly Jo has been an intuitive psychic and clairvoyant for over 40 years. She has used her gifts to assist with investigations involving missing people, murder cases, and she has participated in archaeological digs. Kelly Jo is a seasoned medical intuitive and animal communicator who strives to bring reassurance to others through her talent. Sit back, relax, and get ready to explore all things mystical and spiritual with Kelly Jo Monahan.
Hello, everybody. I'm Kelly Jo Monahan, your host for Biscuit and Tea Mystic. We got a real treat tonight. We have Eric from Unseen Paranormal. He's a paranormal investigator, and it's going to be interesting talking to Eric and see how he got started and all that. I'm sure he has a lot of interesting stories to tell us. So I am going to bring him on now and get ready for a good show, guys. Hi, Eric. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks
first
for having me.
I'm
happy to come on.
First thing I want to ask is, what made you get into this?
Well, I've had paranormal experiences kind of my entire life. The first one I ever had was when I was 8 years old. I kind of woke up out of a dead sleep and sat straight up in the bed and saw a full body glowing apparition in my door. And I jumped up and turned the light on, slammed the door. And so that kind of kicked off the fascination. And then also growing up, I was always into horror movies and zombies. And of course I grew up in the 80s, 90s. So I was a fan of Ghostbusters and that type of stuff. And then, unfortunately when I was 14, my father passed away. And so that got me even more interested in trying to find out, you know, what happens after we die. So I, as a teenager, got more and more into it, found that a lot of my friends were into the paranormal as well and were just as curious as I was. And this is back in the 90s before any of the ghost shows were on TV, and it was a big ordeal in pop culture. And so we would, I always preface this because I don't condone trespassing in any way, but we used to sneak on to a few places, go out to some cemeteries at night and sneak on to some historic properties around Middle Tennessee where I live and did our own little investigation. And it's just kind of snowballed from there. And I've been researching and kind of digesting every book and documentary and TV show I could get my hands on ever since then.
So you have a good group that you work with now?
I kind of stepped back from investigating a lot. I still do investigations with a group called Medics for Paranormal. There's some friends of mine that I helped start the group. But when I started my podcast, The Unseen Paranormal, I kind of stepped back and I just go in and do as a guest investigator and kind of help them out with events. And then I'm kind of getting into the paranormal event arena. I have an event coming up on Friday at Historic Rosemont here in Gallatin, Tennessee.
Oh, neat. Do you have a bucket list of a place that you would like to see before you pass out of this world?
Oh, yeah. I think every paranormal investigator has a pretty good bucket list of where they would like to go. I've been fortunate enough to go to a lot of different locations, and Tennessee is a huge haunted state. There's so much history here and so many historical locations and had major Civil War battles and all this stuff. So there's lots of those pretty close. Probably I would love to investigate a castle over in the UK for sure. Just because we think of our history in the United States as having a lot of history, but then you go over there and it's thousands of years of history and it just goes back so much further. And I'm a huge history buff as well. And that's kind of my role when I paranormal investigate with my friends team is I kind of dive into the history and the research. So, yeah, a castle, I would love to just go over there and dive into the history and find out who could be haunting the place and that type of stuff. That's a huge one on my bucket list. I think a lot of paranormal investigators as well, the White House would be a huge one.
I kind of
heard stories of like Lincoln's ghost and just who may still be there because of all the history surrounding the White House. Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary here in Tennessee. It's in Petros, Tennessee, out in the mountains. I have not been there, and it's close to me, so that's definitely an attainable one that I would love to go to.
Yeah, I know that there's a layer of history wherever you go because of, you know, history and time frames, you know. You walk on land,
yeah.
You know it's going to have a variance of different time periods.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's
very intriguing.
I love diving into that history, too, because I think the paranormal and the history go hand in hand. And so, you know, the paranormal is history. Yeah, and so as an investigator and a researcher going into a place armed with that knowledge of who once walked those halls or what happened on that land, I think it just empowers you even more to figure out what's going on, especially if you're going into a private location, a business or a private home. And it just helps you figure out for people and try to get answers for people.
And it's neat to have it be verified, too. Me being a medium, I do it sort of backwards. You know, I meet the ghost first, and then the person that's there, and then you do the history later, and you verify it. Because I see dead people. It's fun going to different places and seeing what's there, you know.
And sometimes they
don't even know it's haunted because, you know, if you're a medium, you'll pick up on stuff that they didn't know was there.
Right, right. And also a lot of things get lost to history, too, because if it wasn't written down back, you know, hundreds of years ago or there was nobody cared to pass on the story, then there's a lot of things that get lost to history that happened on locations that we will never know. And it takes bringing in somebody like you who can speak with the dead and kind of get to the bottom of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and sometimes there's trapped spirits that need to be released. So, you know, sometimes if I'm even on vacation, I'll go and release spirits, you know, in graveyards or in places and just send them to light through the light. And there you go. You know, it's like, okay, that person's trapped. Okay, there you go. You know,
it's just getting into everything paranormal. And that's why I started my podcast, Sensing Paranormal, was to have the opportunity to do more research and talk to people who interest me and to try to, you know, learn more knowledge from them. And because everybody has a different experience. And so on my show, I'll have different other paranormal investigators and not even investigators from TV. I've had a few of those, but like small town investigators, because everybody gets into the paranormal and has their own stories and they have their own experiences. So to listen to those stories is just really interesting to me. And I know my audience probably gets a little tired sometimes because I always ask the origin story of how did you get into the paranormal? Like you asked me at the beginning. But everybody always has a different answer and everybody always has different reasons. I think the ultimate reason we're all in the paranormal as an investigator or researchers is trying to figure out what's going on with the high strangeness and supernatural stuff. But I think everybody has their own experiences and own smaller reasons for getting into the field.
Oh, yeah. And it's also for the spirits, too, because they were human ones. You know, what we're doing is we're helping them get closure. And we're telling their story.
Yeah, that have that opportunity, like I was talking about the history, have that opportunity to tell a little more of their story. And it kind of keeps them, their memory alive, and they're not forgotten. I mean, some of the spirits we come into contact with may have no family members remaining on Earth. They might, you know, it might have been a woman who never was married or had kids, or a man who was never married and had kids, and they just don't have any family left. So it's a way to carry on their memory and tell their stories, especially when you come to a place that has like a tragic story associated with it, with whether it be suicide, murder, or, you know, anything like that. It validates that they're that their history happened and that they're still around in a lot of cases.
Yes, and that they were here and they're acknowledged. And sometimes when we go to a place like that, I don't know if you'll agree with me or not, it's so that you can bring them closure so that they can cross over.
Yeah, yeah, I kind of approach it from more of a way to help people. I mean, that's just my approach. You as a medium, of course, you're there in a little bit different capacity. If I can help a spirit cross over and that comes across through EVPs or evidence that I get, then I would do everything I could, because I don't want them to be tortured and stuck in a place. Because, you know, I could just imagine being in that same situation where, you know, nobody can see you or hear you necessarily until you act out or something. And then, you know, just how frustrating that would be, and kind of living in your own kind of hell. And
right.
Yeah. If I present the opportunity, I would definitely try my best to, or find somebody like you to come in and cross them over.
Because I think that's important for them. And like you say, telling the story. Some of them just want their story told. And, you
right.
know, they aren't stuck. They're just, they go in and out and they check on things, you know?
Yeah, and I think some locations that I've been to, I think, really enjoy investigators coming in. Some of the public places, like the event that I'm doing on Friday, I was talking to the director and the historian of the place, and he was telling me that they've been closed all winter because they close at the end of October, and they're closed through April 1st. So we'll be the first paranormal investigators to come back in there and do an event. And he's like, the house has been active, and they're kind of antsy because they know it's the time of year that people start coming. And so I think a lot of the times they look forward to those visitors at a lot of locations too.
Yes. As long as everybody's respectful.
Yeah. 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 I'm big on that because I just look at it like they were once people as well.
Yep.
And also I've worked 20 years in the medical field, the past 14 as an EMT on the ambulance. So I come at it I've been taking care of people my whole life. So I come at it with that compassion of understanding they were once people too. So they could be, like I was saying, stuck or miserable or, you know, so yeah, they deserve to be treated with respect and not go in and provoke and all this stuff just to get a response.
Yeah. I don't like it when they provoke them like that, because they're humans, you know. They were human ones.
Right.
You know, and some of them just love having their story told. You know, they're kind, they're polite, and you can cohabitate with them, you know.
Yeah, and some of the historical locations that I've investigated in talking to the directors, the historians of the place, the people that work there, every investigation I've ever been on like that, they've always find out little tidbits to add more to the stories of the people that we didn't know to begin with. So even though I've done my research and I have a good grasp on the history of even a well-known historical location, when you go in and you get EVPs and names that maybe hadn't come up before, then you can go back in the historical record and maybe find out little pieces of information that even some of these more well-known places, it wasn't known about.
And that's so cool to do that. It's so much fun to do that.
Yeah, yeah, it's a blast. And I tell a lot of people, and I've talked about this on my show quite a bit with lots of investigators, other investigators as well, but it's not like you see on TV. It's and even doing public events, going, I was a guest investigator for an event that we just did for first responders about a month ago at Thomas House Hotel, which is notoriously haunted in Red Bull and Springs, Tennessee. And a lot of them coming into it were apprehensive about coming in and participating in the investigation because they were scared. And that's kind of the sentiment we got from everybody at the beginning of the night. And once they saw it's not all demonic and evil like you see on TV, and
right.
they kind of got settled in, by the end of the night, everybody was fired up about it, and they were excited about what we may have captured on the EVP and the experiences that we had while we were investigating, and the the K2 hits and the REM pod hits that we got, and we're kind of communicating with through a flashlight. And so they all got excited, and they all were of the opinion, like, you know, they didn't believe us, I think, at first completely, that this is nothing like you see on TV with some of the shows where everything's demonic and somebody's getting possessed all the time. Those
right.
cases are way few and far between, and luckily for me, I've never encountered one of those, anything that I would call demonic or kind of in that vein. Now, I've encountered some nasty spirits, but I think if you're a nasty person in life, you're probably going to be a nasty
spirit. Yeah, if you're nasty here, you're going to be nasty there, right?
Yeah. I mean, why would that change? It happens every time I participate in a public event. I see people's kind of right before my eyes, kind of see their opinion change when they figure out that, oh, well, there's nothing to be scared of. You know, you're sitting in the dark with a group of other like-minded people. And it's just like talking, like we're talking now. Like, I can't see you, but I can hear you, you know, and that's kind of why we use the equipment with the EVPs on the voice recorders. And some people even use like the geo boxes and the spirit boxes and the ITCs that scan for radio station.
Now, I don't know if our audience knows what an EVP is. Can you explain what an EVP is, please?
Yeah, it is an electronic voice phenomenon. So it's a disembodied voice that you can capture on a recording device.
Okay.
So that's why we use voice recorders. One of the best tools that I found is my cell phone, because it takes pictures. I can record audio and various other things, and it's all instant right there. But yeah, with getting those voices, you're kind of in a way, and with, like I say, the spirit boxes, they rapidly scan through radio stations. And it's the way that it scans, it's impossible for the technology to give you a full sentence, because it's not stopping on a radio station. So when you have a voice come through that says more than one word, then we tend to lean toward the paranormal. And all this is theory, because you can't be an expert in something you can't prove. So
right.
it's all in theory, and it's all from doing experiments and thinking outside the box to try to further the field by thinking outside the box and using different instruments, like a flashlight. I'm a skeptical believer. So especially when it comes to tools that paranormal investigators use, I'm a little skeptical of some of them, like the flashlight trick of putting the flashlight down and you, it's one of the ones that you screw to turn on. And instead of screwing it all the way where it's on, you turn it to where it's not, and the spirits in theory can manipulate it to come on to answer you. And I've been part of many sessions where we've had yes and no responses with the flashlight, and I can't call that. It's not normal, so it's paranormal. I can't say it's a spirit, but when you get evidence on multiple pieces of equipment, so at the same time that flashlight is going off in responses to questions, and we get something on a voice recorder, a voice answering the question as well, then it kind of lends more credence to that it is a spirit communicating with you. So it's just various equipment and capturing things in different ways. And like I said, I'm a skeptical believer, so I have to be proven by multiple pieces of equipment. I don't just believe one thing. So
right. I understand. Then do you use the what is it? Another one that is called a REM pod.
Yeah.
And that lights up and gets, can you explain how that works?
Yeah. So a REM pod it's generally just it's a little round cylindrical object that has an antenna coming off of it. Just like one of those old radio antennas that telescopes out, and it has lights on it. And some of them make noise as well. And what it does is that antenna detects the electromagnetic field around it. So if you can go up as a living, breathing person and get close to that antenna, and you'll set it off. The lights will blink and it'll make a noise.
Okay.
And so in theory, spirits can manipulate the electromagnetic field. And the reason that we can go up and touch that antenna and make it go off is because our bodies naturally give off where you naturally give off an electromagnetic field around your body. That's how you can tell when somebody walks in the room behind you, but you don't hear them, but you know they're there. It's one of those extra senses. And we have more than the senses you generally think of, and that's one of them. But the REM pod, yeah, I've gotten some really good sessions with the REM pod. One of the most interesting things that I've ever had happen with the REM pod, I was investigating it was a county rescue building. So like the fire and rescue ran out of there at one time, and now they just use it as a offices and a training facility where they have classroom stuff. But they were having some activities, so they had us come in to see if we could figure out what was going on. And I was videotaping this REM pod session. We were asking questions and telling, you know, whatever spirits were there, touch the REM pod for yes, and don't touch it if the answer is no. So I watched on the viewfinder of the video camera. I was holding a night vision video camera with an infrared light on it, so I could see in the dark with it. And we're in total darkness. And they're asking questions, and it was lighting up for yes responses. And then I saw this orb that was emitting its own light in the viewfinder of the camera, and I watched it go straight into the REM pod. And as soon as it went into the REM pod went off, and it went off for probably 30 seconds.
Wow.
And yeah, so that was really, that's the first time I've ever seen with my own eyes, seen what looked like a spirit, manipulating the REM pod, to see an orb. And this wasn't dust or anything like that. This, as soon as it got to the REM pod went off, but it's a very useful tool. And like I said, I like to have multiple things, but the REM pod is definitely a very useful tool.
Did you find out who it was?
We believe we did. There's two spirits there from what we could ascertain. One of them was somebody who had worked on the rescue squad for 30-something years, and just figured he had come back because that's where he was comfortable and that's what he had done. He had worked on the fire engine and going out and doing water rescues and that type of stuff for like 30 years. And so they just think that when he passed away, he came back. And then also that station is on land where a pretty big Civil War battle happened, the Battle of Stones River in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And we believe that there's a Civil War soldier.
Civil War soldier.
That is just hanging out there. And he hangs out upstairs, like off in this back corner. It's kind of where we got readings and kind of had a, it was like he wanted to come out, but he didn't. We kind of got the sense from all the evidence that we collected and the interaction that we had that he's kind of hiding up there, maybe not aware that the war is over and just kind of hiding up there. And there's been reports of people seeing him in the building.
Now, does he wear a cap?
Particularly. Yeah, yeah. And he's got a backpack on and carries a musket.
Some sort of rifle. His uniform is gray?
I don't know if they ever said what color it was.
Okay. I think he has a gray uniform.
Yeah.
And so you say the right-hand corner upstairs?
Yes.
Because, yeah, if you take a picture, like, without the flash or with the flash, you'll probably get a capture or a picture of him when you go back.
One of the interesting things that happened there's a room where they used to have beds because being a rescue station, it was manned 24 hours a day, so people slept there. And I was sitting in a fold-up chair about a foot from the wall, and this wall shares on the other side of the wall is where I was talking about where they think that the Civil War soldier hides.
Yeah.
And I'm about a foot from the wall, and I have really short hair on the sides of my head and the back, and I felt like twice, on two different occasions, somebody running their finger up the back of my head, like my hair.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was pretty interesting. We had a cell phone that was on a fold-up chair one of the investigators had placed it in the middle, and we were in the other room. He had placed it in the middle of the chair. And we had gone to another room to investigate, and we heard a loud bang and went in there, and the cell phone was about 2 feet away from the chair on the floor. And so that was interesting. Yeah, and there was lots of reports of stuff being moved there and of things disappearing and then showing up elsewhere.
Oh,
where they should have been.
Portal. Yeah, a portal got open. Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So very interesting place, very very active for sure. We had quite a few experiences there. We went there twice and investigated and kind of calmed the fears of the ladies who work in the building and their trainers for the rescue squad and the firefighters and the EMS.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of scaring them, and we kind of calmed their fears that it wasn't nothing to be afraid of. And so, yeah, a pretty interesting investigation.
Neat. Have you had something that was really intense, like more intense than that you've investigated, like one that was like a conundrum that you couldn't figure out?
I think the most intense investigation you've ever done was that Octagon Hall in Franklin, Kentucky. That place, when you walk in the door, you always feel like you're being watched, and your body is just kind of always on edge. And
wow.
There's lots of phenomena associated with that place, from Bigfoot to other cryptids to UFOs to all the spirits that are there. Just a whole – Also, I don't know what you would call this. I guess it would be some sort of time portal has been reported on
yeah.
property.
Yeah.
Yeah, where, well, they report in the basement there's a spiritual portal, but they told us that if we were outside in the back lawn of this place, they own 300 acres and the house sits on it, but they only maintain 10 of it. For Octagon Hall, and you can actually go there and tour the place and stuff, and they do public ghost hunts throughout the year. But they told us that if we were out walking around at night and we saw a green mist, not to walk into it.
Right, because it'll follow you up and you'll disappear forever.
Yeah, yeah. And
wow.
It's also the only investigation I was ever told to bring a handgun, but that was practical because they have Mama Cougar on the property. So,
yeah, but you also have
Bobcats and cougars and stuff.
And Sasquatch.
Yeah, yeah. They told us don't go out. There's a slave cemetery that is kind of a little bit through the woods at the back of the property, and they told us if we went out there, don't go out there alone because of not only the Bobcat, but also the Bigfoot sightings they've had and that type of stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, the same investigator who had his phone thrown off the chair at the rescue squad building, I saw this with my own eyes, and it happened twice. One of our other investigators saw it as well, the first time it happened, but his phone was sitting on a table beside him in the room where this spiritual portal was.
Uh-huh.
And we were getting lots of REM pod responses, lots of activity in there in general. But his cell phone jumped off the table by itself twice.
Wow.
Yeah, the second time it happened, I actually watched it.
Wow.
Four of us were in the room when it happened that time. But that place is just, you're just on edge the whole time you're there.
Yeah, 10 different things going on all at once. Goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a very interesting place. It has an interesting history. It has a Civil War history, and the owner, the man who built it, he was a Confederate sympathizer. And when the Union troops came through, they basically took all the furniture out of the house and burned it. And
wow.
They killed their pet. They killed the pet cow and threw it down the well to poison the well.
Oh, man.
So,
too.
Yeah. So when you go to tour the place, it's a historic home. And when you go to tour the place, there's only a couple of things in there that are actually original to the house because all the furniture was burnt.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So there's and they also use it as a field hospital during the Civil War. So lots of death there. Lots of tragic things happen throughout the years.
Wow.
Yeah, very extensive tragic history of Octagon Hall.
Yeah, and then you have all kinds of other elements going on there too. Yay!
Yeah. There's two experiences. You asked what's the most intense. The most intense was Octagon Hall. There's two experiences that I've had in my life that were just kind of incredible. The first one happened when we were, like I said, I don't condone trespassing, but when I was 16, 17 years old, we had snuck on the property of a place in Franklin, Tennessee called Carton Plantation. And Carton Plantation was a field hospital during the Battle of Franklin, and over around 2,000 soldiers died at the Battle of Franklin, and the majority of them were taken to the Carton House, Carton Plantation, inside the house. And so they basically had wounded and dead soldiers in every nook and cranny of this two-story ginormous plantation-style home. And even on the – they had bodies even on the back porch.
Wow.
So it's notoriously haunted, and it was kind of – I grew up hearing about Carton Plantation. But we had snuck out there one night and experienced – you can hear – I've heard cannon fire out there in the middle of the night. And you're talking about now it's in the middle of a, you know, modern city. There's no reason to hear gunfire and cannons.
Right.
And we were there's a field. It's about 200 yards from where we'd walk onto the property. You have to go across this field about 200 yards to get up to the back of the house. And we had already walked around the house, and we were going to leave for the night. And so I'm walking back across this field, and it's about knee-deep, the grass is. And two of my friends are about 10 foot behind me. One of our friends was quite a ways ahead of us. So I'm walking across this field, and me and my two friends behind me, we hear what sounds like a horse galloping to the left of us.
Wow.
And we hear the horse whinny. And we're commenting, like, are you hearing this? Like, there's no horses around here. And it sounds like it's running towards us. Right as we're kind of commenting that we're hearing this horse galloping, we're kind of amazed by it, I feel this cold breeze go through me and just chills and hair standing on end. And I look to my right, and the grass in a straight line is moving to my right. And we heard the galloping. So it was like a ghost horse ran through me and out the other side.
Yeah, you got jumped by a ghost horse. Wow.
Yeah, and my friends are like, they saw the grass moving on the other side and still heard the horse gallop. And they're like, are you okay? Did that just run through you? Like, did something just run through you? I'm like, yeah, I think it did. And that was an odd experience.
Wow.
Incredible experience. And then
I have that problem too with hearing and seeing stuff. You know, like when I was in North Carolina, I thought they were doing reenactment. I could hear bullets and cannons and horses and smell smoke. Well, I was seeing and hearing that nobody else was doing it, because I went into an information place and ask if they were doing a reenactment.
Yeah.
And they weren't. I said, never mind.
Excuse me. That location, Carton Plantation, is known for many, many. There's been so many reports of people hearing horses, cannon fire, gunfire, people screaming. I saw a woman one night in the middle of the night. We were up there, and I saw a woman pull the curtain back and poke her head out, looking to see who's on her front lawn. And there was nobody there. I mean, none of the staff was there. If that was one of the staff members, we probably would have, you know, gotten in trouble for trespassing.
Right,
and,
but it was
lots of
there.
Yeah, and there's been, and I didn't know this until years later. But there's been many people who have reported seeing her looking out the window as well, just like I saw. And yeah, lots of reports of lots of things there. The majority of the soldiers that died, I know it was all the Confederate soldiers, like 1,200 something Confederate soldiers, are buried on the property. So the owners of Carton Plantation, the McGavicks, after the battle was over, the Union soldiers were just ordered to bury the dead wherever they were on the battlefield.
Yeah.
So the McGavick family, being a prominent Middle Tennessee family outside of Nashville, they paid a doctor to go and dig up all the bodies and bury them on a piece of property at Carton Plantation. So now there's almost 1,300 Confederate soldiers, and they A lot of them are unknown because they didn't have dog tags and that stuff back then.
Yeah.
So a lot of them didn't have any kind of identifying stuff on their bodies. So they, the only thing they could tell is what state they were from. So they buried them, grouped what state they were from. So you got, you know,
wow.
Tennessee, Kentucky, Arkansas.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. Separated up a state. And
wow.
So, yeah, there's been many reports of a soldier that people thought when they saw him that he was a reenactor, but he just mysteriously disappears. But they've gone to the cemetery during the day and seen this guy, and they thought he was just a reenactor or a guide for the cemetery, and he just up and vanishes.
Wow.
They'll look away for a second, look back, and he's gone. And he never taught, and the reports are that he never talked to anybody.
Wow.
I had a friend, they recreated the gardens, the flower gardens next to the house, and there's pea gravel in the pathways that you walk in between the flower beds. And I had some friends, I wasn't there this particular night, but I had a friend who was reluctant to go because he's like, whatever, ghost, whatever. You know, not a believer, didn't really care about it. And so he agreed to go with a couple of our other friends. And so he went up there with them, and he's walking in this, on this pea gravel path, on this gravel path up in the flower bed area. And he thought one of our friends was walking behind him because he heard his footstep in the gravel. And when he got to the end of the path, he turns around and he swears that there was a Civil War soldier standing about 3 feet from him. And the friend that he thought was walking behind him was nowhere to be found.
Wow.
So, yeah, it wasn't even anywhere near where he was at. And they said that he ran to the vehicle and he would never go back. Nobody could ever get him to go back. It
wow.
scared him. Yeah. But he was always making fun of us for going up there, and he was never a believer.
Well, he
and,
got his
yeah,
one up there, didn't he?
Yeah. So that location, I wish that they would open it up to do investigations. As far as I know, nobody's ever investigated there. In October, they do some paranormal tours. But if you go on a regular tour, I've tried many times when I've gone and toured the place, they won't tell you any ghost stories. They won't say anything about the ghost, even though there's all these reports and it's just kind
yeah,
of widely known if you grew up around here.
Neat. Well, I want to thank you, Eric, for coming on and being with me tonight.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
And I hope you have a good night.
You too. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, now I'll take a couple of y'all's calls. 314, hello. Hello, 314.
Hi.
What's your name? What's your question?
Martha.
And what's your question?
I was wondering what you pick up regarding my love life and career.
Well, only one question, which one you want answered, because I got just a little bit of time left.
Career.
Looks like you're going to get an opportunity in May. It's like 15th, 16th, and 17th. So look for something like that for a better opportunity for work in May.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Now, 775, hello. What's your name? What's your question?
Certainly. My name is Wendy from California, and I'm in a dispute with a hearing insurance company, and the woman who referred to herself as a mentor was very rude to me, and she hung up on me. I don't know if the company is aware of her doing that, but is there going to be a resolution?
Yeah, it looks like there'll probably be a resolution within a four. So it's either 4 days, 4 weeks, or 4 months.
What kind of resolution? Would they give me back my money or allow me to buy new
hearing
aids
at a reduced
cost?
I'm seeing that's all in here, and it's resolution in four.
Will
so
I be happy?
You'll have resolution. That's all that I'm hearing.
Okay. Well,
okay,
very
thank
kind
you.
Of you to take my call. I appreciate
all right.
you always. Thank
You're
you.
Welcome.
God bless.
All right. 615. Hello, 615. What's your name? What's your question? Hello? Nope. All right. Well, I hope. 775. Hello, 775.
Oh, hi. You just spoke to me. Thank you.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're
fine. All right. Thank you. I hope that everybody has a wonderful evening. And remember, see you in the future. And have a great night. And keep everything positive. We'll say a prayer for the earth, a prayer for the world, and keep smiling.